All right, everybody, welcome to A Course in Miracles. And so this class tonight is in a way it's kind of a remedial for you if you've been studying the course all along, especially if you've been in my Thursday night meetings. So Cecily and David, you guys are going to recall some of the heavy duty work we've done with the special relationship. And then Holly, if you're new to this idea, we will certainly define how Course carefully uses this term, special relationship. We'll bust the ego as we go along around this vector into really busting the ego's idea of relationship. So, you know, one of the ways that the ego holds us in this prison of time and space and unhappiness, with a little bit of happiness here and there, and then promise of more happiness, but then of course some unhappiness comes before that. The way it does that is it has these relationships that we set up, and they're kind of what's the simplest way? Probably conditional, I think. Conditional relationships. That is, that you're willing to be involved with somebody with your precious time and with your promises and with your patience and everything else, as long as they, you know, say or do what you expect. Don't kiss anybody else. Might be one of those things. And they say, no, I'm only going to kiss you. That's it. I promise. And then you kind of say, well, that kind of makes you special to me. And I promise not to kiss anybody else either. You see, so it's conditional. If I catch you kissing somebody else, well, yeah, you're going to hear from me, the special relationship. But it isn't just people, is it? It isn't just those special love relationships that the Course is talking about, is it? Because don't you find yourself kind of in a conditional relationship with your car? Let me explain. You have the key to that car. Holly does not have a copy of that key. When you go out to your car, because you paid good money for it and you've been maintaining, you paid the garage to change it, you turn the key, it should start. Not make any weird noises and take you where you want to go and come back and then just sit in the garage until you're ready again. Right? That's sort of the contract that you have with your car. But it isn't just the loved ones in your life. And it isn't just your car, is it? Where you have a special relationship. In other words, a conditional or contractual relationship where if you did not get what you wanted, you would withhold your love. You would withhold your cooperation in the relationship. In fact, this whole world is built on specialness. It's not a sin. It's just the game you're playing right now. It's part of your investment and complete devotion to separateness. It's not a sin. Do it as long as you like. Have more loved ones. Have more cars. Have more arguments. Hire more lawyers. Fix it all up. You can do that. It's not a sin. But if you're doing A Course in Miracles, you've probably come to a hunger for love and peace that you could not find in the world. That's why we join together to heal our minds from starvation. Starvation from love. Starvation from a sense of peace. Starvation from a sense of understanding even what you are. And where is love? Then what is love? You're starving. If you're studying A Course in Miracles, this big fat book with no pictures, you have a good reason. So welcome to A Course in Miracles. We're going to do some more of this investigation and awakening from this habit you have of specialness. Yeah. So let's just take a few minutes to go quiet and land here in the meeting. And I'll say a few words what comes up, but it'll just be 5 or so minutes before we jump in. So recognize now, as you still your body, you're beginning a relationship contract even in this moment. You're saying, body, I would like you to chill out, be still. And you expect that to go as planned. Notice in your life the people that will be close to you. Notice there's a little contract there. They are supposed to be or say or reliably do or respect certain rules so that they would fall in line and be your proper son or your proper wife or a proper husband or proper boss. Right? Your boss is supposed to treat you a certain way. Don't say this. Don't ever do that. But do give me a paycheck if I show up to work. And that's the deal. How about your neighbor? That person that maybe you don't talk to too much, but they're right over there. Do you have a special relationship with that neighbor? Can you imagine somehow not having the contract and showing up in that moment without a past, without a future expectation or past memory? Kind of like you do when you're in line at the Safeway and you greet the person as if they were your best friend, knowing that you will not see them again in a few moments. Isn't it interesting how that relationship goes so easily? Cooperating. You're doing your part. They're doing their part. So easy. No baggage. Everything is accepted and goes well. But if you come home and there's a bunch of dirty dishes in the sink, again, where's the love? And finally, for example, with the dirty dishes, when you thought about how unfair it is for somebody else to leave their dirty dishes in the sink, how did it make you feel in that moment? Your Course in Miracles work is indeed a return to love. In every single circumstance, this is a way back for the ugliest circumstances, and the most beautiful will all be reconciled with understanding. This you shall do. Would anybody like to say a few words about the contractual relationships in their lives before we jump in and hear Jesus make a few cutting comments about them?
Yeah, I'd like to say something. I'd like to say
please,
something.
Don, go ahead.
Hi. So I've been gone for about 3.5 weeks or so.
He's kind of frozen. But what a great picture to freeze on, huh? Anybody else want to say anything before we jump in on your special relationships? Sindari, what do you got?
Well,
Jason,
Jason,
Jason muted himself. Oh, Don is back.
A little bit about the script is written in regards to what we're talking about with special relationships.
Yes.
And how forgiveness plays into it all, so that we begin to have an alive relationship.
Yes. Yes. Very good. Very good. The alive relationship happens in the present. In fact, life of any type happens only in the present moment. That's the short answer. If you go out into the future with expectations, or you go into the past with obligations and memories of what happened last time, you're starting to die. You're starting to go into contract land. You're starting to go into specialness. And you cannot be joyous or loving with an expectation or a pattern preset in your head from the past. You can still have a good time, but be aware it will not be as flowing and as easy as the love you're looking for. So, yeah, Barbara?
Sorry. I didn't hear what Don had to say. I didn't get his point. Could you either restate it, or could Don restate it? Is that okay?
Don, you want to restate your point?
Yeah. Because you did freeze.
Especially after my answer, and you can clarify if it was not satisfactory.
Yeah. Well, what I was bringing up was, having been gone 3.5 weeks, I come back into this relationship and this family, and I'm wanting to experience love. And I'm noticing that I am attached to form and things getting done and not having gotten done. And then I brought up the idea of the script is written, and how forgiveness plays into being able to be here and now, be in the present, and have an aliveness, you know, in that moment.
Yes.
And something Andrew said, though, that I'm wondering, he said, now, but be aware that if you're really here and now, it won't be your imagined way of having aliveness. You know, who knows what will happen? It won't be scripted. Wow. I just got this feeling of fear. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, but you know, Don, when you've laughed, when you've truly laughed or out loud, and your head was rocking and your mouth was falling open and you almost, you know, laughing, you were a present moment.
Yeah.
That's what it, that kind of freedom.
I get it. Yeah. It's lovely.
Yeah. And when we say the script is written, which is from lesson 158, it's a quote. Jesus says, you know, what that means is that the game that you're in, time, space, body, gravity, you happen to be a male. That script that is written, what you actually do with it is completely unwritten. But you will find yourself, for example, a tennis game. Script is written. There's one ball and a net. If there are two balls, it's not tennis. It's playing something else. The script is written. However, who knows what's going to happen during the tennis game? But I'll tell you this, though. That ball goes over the net a few times, and eventually one person did it more than the other, and it's over, and somebody won. That's called tennis. But no, you can never predict what's going to happen. You see? And so, in a way, tennis is extremely limited. In another way, it's not. The script is written. When you will awaken to your, back to your eternity, the script is written when the tennis game will be over. Absolutely. They do not last forever, and none of them. So, script is written, in the case of your example, that in the world of the ego, some people get lazy and don't do what you think they're going to do. That's the tennis game I know, called living it with a body and other people. That's the game I know. I'm not surprised at all. Now, you choose to be understanding and cooperative in the moment, people will bend in and say, you know what, Don, it's good to see your home. I'm going to do that right now. Since you're not attacking me or defending yourself, they might find it in their heart to say, I did tell you I would do this while you were gone. I forgot. I'll go do it right now. Things like that will happen without attack and defense present. Yeah.
I did find myself being patient and just observing and aware of what was going on inside me. And I'll tell you, I'm a little bit like coming through a fog, you know, having been gone, and also driving like 900 miles, you know.
Well, that'll do it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that'll do it to you. Yeah.
So it's a kind of an otherworldly experience I'm having.
Oh, well, welcome back. Holly, do you want to say something?
I just wanted to kind of share a quote that helped me to stay present. Observe the space between thought and then observe the observer. Every time I think of that, I'm just like, it just brings me right there. So I don't know. I just... If anyone has trouble being present, I feel like anytime I think of that quote, I just start smiling and I'm like, okay, I'm good.
Nice. Nice. Yes, that's fully in the Course in Miracles.
Oh, put that in chat.
I'll show you where it says a similar sentence in the Course in Miracles. Go ahead and put that in chat, Holly. It'd be appreciated. And then I'll show you a sentence where it has a little circular. Your mission to become the observer again is said in different words, but very direct. You know, I think we should go here every single meeting. But here we go for this meeting. It's now. Go to page 595.
Andrew?
Yeah.
Oh.
Sundari.
Are we still sharing or is this?
Oh, yeah, we're still sharing. I'm gonna pull out one sentence for Holly, and then I'm gonna ask you to jump in with your sharing. Thank you.
In the text, 595.
In the text, 595. We're still sharing. Yeah, 595. Am I back yet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's funny. Okay, 595. Paragraph 12. There's a couple of people are freezing here and there. Yeah. Big internet night. Must be the release of a new TV show on Netflix. We had the biggest problem. People were downloading Stranger Things or whatever, and it would be from 7 to 8 p.m. or 6 to 7 p.m. There was a huge draw on the internet. All right. Look at 595, paragraph 12. And see, it says this world's full of miracles. And it says, the miracles stand in shining silence next to every dream of pain and suffering and sin and guilt. That's where you find miracles. But that's not why we're at this paragraph tonight. Miracles are the dream's alternative. The choice, here we go, to be the dreamer rather than deny the active role of making up the dream. To be the dreamer rather than a character in your dream. To be the observer rather than the victim in the dream. Mm-hmm. Sentence four. The miracles are glad effects of taking back the consequence of sickness to its cause. And then when you become the observer, truly the observer, I mean, you really are an observer of this situation, you're not in it. You're a witness to it. Then, sentence five, the body is released because the mind acknowledges, hey, this is not done to me, but I am doing this. Back to eternal, back to the power of your mind. Good, good. And when you get there, back to page 451 in the text. Sundari, what would you like to say?
Well, I found that a really interesting meditation for me, a contemplation, and going very different places than I would have thought. And I just started looking at, just focused on the comings and goings into and out of special relationship. And then after a while of looking at that, it became just focused on the going, on the going. And I was thinking of a situation like twice someone has broken up with me on Valentine's Day.
Oh. And
once was just the best breakup of my whole life. Not so beautifully, I mean, just elegantly, the way that it transpired. And the other was actually the worst breakup of my life. And I was thinking about, even with death, that I was thinking of just this profound experience I had with my mother's death, of having cleared with her 6 years before and being able to say in her last moment, you were a good person, you were a good woman, you did the best you could. And she took three more breaths and died. And this, and peace I've never known just settled over me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started thinking more during the discussion here. And it seemed to me that the kiss, I all of a sudden formed a hypothesis that all pain is a reflection of initial separation. And and I don't know where I am with that, but it's really interesting just looking at our energetic, how you can take the same situation, you know, someone breaking me up with me on Valentine's Day, and have it be a tremendously positive. And I know both guys still, and they're both my good friends. And what I've found in recent years is the love doesn't ever go away, even at the worst moments with the neighbors, you know, whatever. It's right under the surface.
Good.
It's easily accessible,
mm-hmm.
in the worst of it. But how very painful, in particular, goings are.
Yeah.
Taking your energy away, leaving the house too fast. I just find that very, and all of a sudden thought, what do you think of the idea of all suffering and being pain being a reflection of initial separation?
It requires a belief in separation in order to have loss of any type. Yes.
But we did separate. We went into a belief of the body.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I mean,
we did separate with our belief. You bet. Just as the Course says, it says it's not real, but it's real to you. Therefore, it'll be treated as real. While we gently bring you back to right thinking. So good, Sundari. I think looking at those moments is, and everybody, you took us along for the ride. Everybody can kind of catch yourself having whimsical loss even though Sundari says the love is still there, it's under the surface and she knows it comes back around. But then there's when there's the goodbye that was rude or quick, the habitual thinking from her ego is loss or an insult. Because the special relationship says you should love me more than that. You should treat me better than that. And so you're just playing in the ego's world of loss. What if you had your wits about you, your right-mindedness about you, and you decided that everything that happened to you was for your good? You're not a victim. You're actively participating on this roller coaster ride, and you bought a ticket and you're riding it. If you think it should have been some other way and you object and argue, this is a little battle you will have. It's a little mini war, and mostly it's going to happen in your own head. You know that's true. A Course in Miracles is asking you, for example, on lesson 193, let's go there real quick, just for a minute. Turn into the workbook to way up in, what, the 300s? Go to workbook page 367. Back of the book, there's a half an inch there, a little less, 3/8 of an inch. The back of the book, the bottom of the page, it says 367. And on the top of the page, it says lesson 193. Look at this. Just the title alone is a teaching. And by the way, I recorded just the lesson titles, and I did them meticulously a couple of times each with three views. It took almost 2 hours. With a little bit of music here and there. And all it is the lesson titles. And it's one of the most riveting audios I have. It's great if you've got an hour drive coming up and you listen one way and finish it listening coming home. Just the lesson titles. Sundari.
And I've read through and, you know, listened to that. And it makes complete sense, just as if you're reading the text.
Isn't it? Just the lesson titles. It's a teaching on their own.
This works. This works as just a separate, you know, text.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody send me $5 and your address and I'll mail you a copy. It's 2 CDs. I got a ton of them. What else am I going to do but mail them to you? Okay. Lesson 193 says, all things are lessons God would have me learn. Period. End of teaching. End of comment. Black and white, as clear as it could be. If you're open, if you're ready for this absolute miracle of everything, the script is flipped. The ego says, most things in my life are inconvenient and expensive. Some are really great, worth paying for. Course in Miracles says, all things are lessons God would have you. That's a positive and a negative. There's nothing that the Holy Spirit can't do, can't work with to teach you your true identity and bring you back to the peace that is actually all you want here. You actually want more than peace, of course, but here, you really need to come back to neutral, back to peace, to be reborn as a creator instead of a victim, out of this body of limit, back to infinity and eternity. Sundari.
At that moment of peace that settled when my mom died that I was talking about,
yeah,
came into it was a realization at that instant that without the level of pain in our relationship, I never could have come to that point of peace. And that there was a circle, like, to each relationship that you had an opportunity to close beautifully. And it's like the stretch of each one of them was part of the depth of the resolution. And it, just for an instant, and I couldn't possibly even create the feeling, I had the feeling of the enormity of forgiveness and how it was bigger than we'd ever thought or ever could have thought or even could imagine. And it was, I don't know, such a beautiful way to complete my cycle with her. And I knew we'd done as much as we could with this, you know, crazy relationship that existed.
Yes. And as she ended her life, and she knew her life was ending, and you knew her life was ending, and that starts to happen, you know, long before the person actually dies, you know, some of the sharp edges fall off. Stop taking life so seriously, and the love starts to surface. It's amazing how that happens. Yeah, you don't have to wait for the end of life for that, but yeah, you bet. Everything is turned into a lesson God would have you learn. You bet. It all works for your good. Good. Okay, back to page 451 in the text. Unless somebody else wants to share, let's jump in.
Yeah, Andrew, I'd like to just say something.
Oh, please do.
Well,
Jacqueline, where's your video?
Oh, is it off?
It's off. Sorry.
That's why. I must have hit it accidentally.
There you are. Okay.
So all things are lessons God would have me learn. I mean, that sentence, I mean, there's like a disclaimer below because he's not aware of everything that we are doing here.
All right. All right. Okay. I've tried not to get derailed, but you know what? You're right. We really can't leave that hanging. Please go back to lesson 193. I'm going to have everybody make a note. Oh, Jacqueline, go ahead and finish your question, and I will.
That first paragraph really says it. It's because of what he wills for us ultimately.
Yes.
And then the lessons that we have here can lead, you know, but he's not really involved. It's like he can set lessons up for us.
Right. He's not involved setting up lessons for you. He's not architecting for something for you to stumble on so you can learn how to balance. No. Right. Very good.
Okay. That's all.
Okay. I would like to suggest that you put something on this page. Write something on this page, or at least put it in your mind. When you read this lesson, it might be very helpful. Look at the italics in paragraph 3. Forgive, comma, and you will see this differently. This is the burden of this lesson. It's actually calling you to use the superpower tool that dissolves the ego habit. What's that? Forgiveness. You really must learn to use forgiveness like a tool to correct your mind. So, I would suggest that the title, All Things Are Lessons God Would Have Me Learn, and then jot in forgiveness so that that is a complete sentence. It's bold, I know. But after having studied this lesson so many times, I just did that for myself. So I think I'll suggest it for you too.
So say it again, how you want us to put that in there.
All things are lessons God would have me learn forgiveness.
Got it.
All things. Because that's
the whole lesson. Are there any other lessons that you might need to learn before forgiveness?
Yeah, there's, but only about 192. Just kidding.
Andrew?
Yeah.
May I say something on this? Please. So what my experience in life has been is that when a circumstance is occurring where there's, let's say, misunderstanding or acrimony, if I bring up the tool and say within myself forgiveness, I don't experience any real change. But when, out of grace, I am somehow inspired, literally have it drop into my head to pardon or forgive, and I agree, then it changes. Then everything changes right there. So it's almost like when I bring it into the relationship with a calculated practice, it doesn't do anything in that moment anyway. But if it comes from up here somewhere, it definitely does if I just say okay.
Yeah, and let me also...
Can anybody...
Let me enunciate also. Forgiveness is a verb. It must be something you do with your mind. It is a correction that you make. So you can't just say, I forgive. You can't just say, I forgive. You have to apply the tool. You want to take out a screw, put the screwdriver on the screw head and turn, and voila, it worked. Forgiveness is a tool that must be applied to the problem you think you're having. So you don't just say, oh, God, please help me forgive this horrible situation. No, you're saying it's a horrible situation. That means you believe it's horrible. Forgiveness is the undoing of the beliefs of the ego. Forgiveness is a tool that you apply to the problem. By the way, this is right out of the book. There's no forgiveness in heaven, and God does not forgive. He's never forgiven. Why? Come on, David.
He never condemns.
He never condemned. He never condemned. It's impossible, right? It's only when you're in this world of competition and expectation and contracts, how things are supposed to happen the way you wanted, that you condemn. That you get mad and you judge and you want it to be some other way. Then you need forgiveness. Then you need to release the habitual thinking of condemnation and judgment. Now, forgiveness is a lie most of the time, right? Because you're just trying to feel good, not trying to correct your mind. When you use forgiveness to correct your mind, then it's not a lie. It's a helpful tool that will bring you to a holy instant. You will not forgive something that you believe actually is harmful to you. You will judge it and you will hate it. This is key words now because we're talking about a special relationship, right? Forgiveness, you only will do A Course in Miracles forgiveness on things that you know do not actually harm you. The thought comes up that you're harmed, but you're because you've had a miracle, which is a correction in perception, you can forgive without cost. Because you recognize what you're forgiving is a habitual mind pattern that hurts. So you're not forgiving anything out there, are you? You're forgiving your mind pattern in here. That's heavy and judgmental and worrisome and guilt-ridden. But only if you've had the miracle. That's where the Holy Spirit comes in. Holy Spirit, show me this differently. Don't try to forgive first in your early days. Later you can because you will be generalizing miracles big time as you go along. But if you're not feeling that level of freedom, stop, look at the situation, whatever it is, and ask the Holy Spirit to look at it with you and show me this situation differently. How? You want some more words around that? Go to page 419. 419 in the text. Here's how to practically get the Holy Spirit involved. Page 419 in the text. We really have to remind each other that there are things to do with your mind when you're not supremely happy. You need to call these things in and correct your stinking thinking, and you'll go back to loving and peace and helpfulness to everybody around you, or you first among them. Go to page 419, and let's see, where are we? I think, David, would you unmute yourself? Do you know how to do that yet? This is David's first Zoom, as far as I can tell.
Is it unmuted? Can I hear
you? Yeah, you're looking good.
Okay, no wonder.
Would you read for us the entire paragraph 11 on 419?
Okay. When anything seems to you to be a source of fear, when any situation strikes you with terror and makes your body tremble, and the cold sweat of fear comes over it, remember it is always for one reason. The ego has perceived it as a symbol of fear, a sign of sin and death.
Now, this remember teacher knows you. This teacher, the one who wrote this material for you, knows what it's like living in a body, knows what it feels like, knows the panic, knows that sometimes you go to extremes when something goes wrong. This is a very kind teacher who's really has walked in your shoes. I mean, look at that sentence. Terror makes your body tremble, cold sweat, a fear comes over it. It's always for one reason. The egos perceive it as a symbol of fear. We'll go into that later on another day when we talk about fear. But for now, David, please continue.
Remember then that neither sign nor symbol should be confused with source. For they must stand for something other than themselves. Their meaning cannot lie in them, but must be sought in what they represent. And they may thus mean everything or nothing, according to the truth or falsity of the idea which they reflect. Confronted with such seeming uncertainty of meaning, judge it not. Remember the holy presence of the one given to you to be the source of judgment. Give it to him to judge for you and say, take this from me and look upon it, judging it for me. Let me not see it as a sign of sin and death, nor use it for destruction. Teach me how not to make of it an obstacle of peace. Let you see, use it for me to facilitate its coming.
That would be calling for a correction. That would be calling to heal your mind now. This is you asking the Holy Spirit to correct your perception. And a miracle can flow. When you recognize that if you're not feeling supremely happy or loving, whatever thought you're having is actually one of death. No, not death, Andrew. I just wanted it a little different. No, you actually were entertaining thoughts of murder as you begin to destroy and destruct the moment with your judgment. I know it sounds really harsh, right? But look, this program, this Course in Miracles, the more you see what it means with terms like this, really help you move your mind, not try to be neutral or go halfway. There's only love or its opposite. Barbara?
Sometimes I wonder if this course has ever killed anybody. I have been studying it so hard. And I'm on lesson 119 or 120 or something like that. And I'm cooking along, and I'm doing my 5 minutes in the morning and my 5 minutes in the afternoon and stopping every hour and, you know, doing it. And I'm feeling, I've got momentum, I'm feeling it. And then I get an email from my lawyer. And, I mean, this paragraph, I feel like for the first time, I had a tattoo once on my finger and I got it erased. You know, I actually went and got it erased. And I feel like I need 419 on my finger so I can look down there and remember to read this, because I was vomiting from that email. And,
look at the self-punishment.
Yeah, and I felt attacked. And then I got thrown off the course. I didn't feel like I had the right to read it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's heavy to me. That's why I said, you know, has it ever killed anybody? Because when we're flipping through these lessons and the one that we just read.
I want to ask you a question. Has the ego ever killed anybody? Or does it kill actually?
Kill everybody. Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah. So anyway, it's just, I just feel kind of exhausted. Right now. I mean, I did find a place, you know, in that way that we talk about, you find the place that speaks to you. Mm-hmm. And it happened to be in the manual for teachers. And it was the part that says, how will the world end?
Beautiful. Wow.
And that snapped me out of it. You know, it just says head in the direction. Yeah. You know, you don't have to do anything. Just, you know, if God's voice says you can learn these lessons, you can learn these lessons, and don't be so arrogant as to claim that you can't learn this correct.
Nice, Barbara.
And so that snapped me out of it, and it was like, thank you, Holy Spirit.
What a relief.
Yeah, it was a relief. And so, you know, I haven't really gotten back on, but I'm ready to get back on tomorrow morning, which is why it's nice to be here this evening.
And you know, and you thank you for teaching all of us. You know that you can get back on.
Yes. And every time, this isn't the only time this has happened to me. It's one of the more extreme times that it's happened to me, especially after, you know, really doing the practices and every hour and all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's one of the more dramatic times. But the answers in the book, it's in some page. You know, I didn't go back to the page that I was working on. I just said, I'm going to start reading the manual for teachers. And I had read a few before that. And so that was the next one. And it was exactly what I needed, and that's what's so...
Congratulations, Barbara. You have just said the key words that invite me to tell you, you are now miracle-minded.
Uh-huh.
That means you expect a miracle.
Yeah.
You open the book, and you start reading with confidence, and that's as miracle-minded. You will get a miracle. They're all throughout the entire book writ large. It almost doesn't matter what page you're on. When you're miracle-minded, the entire book, I mean, Nick, I can choose peace instead of this. I'm not a victim of the world I see. I can give up the world I see by giving up attack thoughts. You know, the very nature of the ego is that it is not, period. I mean, any of these sentences could snap you clear.
Well, 419, what we just read.
Or 419.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Good. Thank you, Barbara. Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. That's a great testimony. And in fact, that's exactly how it works. And you are miracle-minded. And nobody can take that away from you. Nobody can take away from you this leverage that this book now represents as a quick fix, a quick solution, a quick surfacing from the darkness of your ego. Congratulations. Way to go.
Thank you.
David.
Yeah. What I'm going to say on this 419, the statement from the bottom, is kind of a different way of is doing it by looking. One of the things I like to use is you look at what's happening. Something happens, you're upset, whereas you don't judge it. You don't say, oh, I did a bad thing. Just look at it in the instant. Like, that's where your holy instance comes in. You're not, you have nothing, your mind, you just leave everything out. You're blank, open-minded. Just look at it. And then you give it, and you're giving, and you get where you can just give it the Holy Spirit. You just say, what was that? It's like a track thing. We use track. We say, what caused that? Or you're kind of throwing this, oh, what's that? What did I do? You know, just look at it. And what happens is that statement happens when it went from the other page where it's different. All of a sudden, the thing changes. You don't want it no more. I don't want to do that no more. And it is, that's
you
the change.
You manage to loosen up your attachment by using Holly's word, becoming the witness. Yeah. Look at it.
Exactly. That witness is the good.
That little bit of space. Maybe all you need to get
off. I do it that way all the time. The forgiveness is like massive.
That's it, man.
So like, you just like, I don't want to do it that way no more. So you can do it any way you want. You know, it doesn't matter what we do. We're not going to change the ego. Just do it. Now, I don't want to do it that way anymore.
Good.
And that's been going on in the last 6 months, big time.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes. Good, good, good. Timothy, read us your note.
Okay. Do not resent that you have an obstacle to peace present in your practice, be it a thing or a relationship you're seeking. Don't make yourself bad for having that obstacle. It's a grand golden opportunity. Instead, give profound gratitude for the obstacles that appear and which you might resent as a sign of your inadequacy. See such obstacles instead as golden opportunities, teaching opportunities. Change the negative emotions associated with your obstructions to gratitude. The chance to know where the work needs to be done. Otherwise, we might not even know.
All things are lessons. All things are lessons. God would have me learn forgiveness. You release those stinking thoughts and then you don't stink anymore in your head. Thank you. Thank you. Good, good. Okay. All right, everybody, let's go back to page 451. Oh, Sundari, what do you got?
Well, two things. I was at a program this week called Take the Hit as a Gift. And the other thing is I have a chapter in my book, The Choice of Happiness, which is on forgiveness. And I just wanted to read the five out of the seven sub-chapters just because I got guidance.
Yeah, please go ahead. Tell us what are the sub-chapters about forgiveness in your book.
Each time I'm saying forgiveness, it's got hyphens between the for and the give and the ness.
Mm-hmm.
Forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. So
one of the sub-chapters is, okay, forgiveness through seeing all traits as one's own. And then forgiveness through gratitude is a sub-chapter. Then forgiving by seeing the world as illusory. And then I have a scientific one, de Broglie and the disappearance of the universe. And then forgiving through aligning with the vertical. And then how I came to forgiveness with my mother and a just suppose we could get there.
Yeah. Nice.
So those are just, you know, sort of like threads that I found in my own life rich to explore as rivulets leading to the river of forgiveness.
You bet. Good, good. Any exploration you do, and of course the book leads you through 1,300 pages and inviting you constantly to explore how does forgiveness work here, here, here. And then when you do your workbook lessons, and if you're following the schedule, you'll be reminded to wake up every 30 minutes and think, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be at peace and I am losing my mind. It could actually pull you back to sanity in the middle of your workday. I did the first time I did A Course in Miracles really seriously with the timer the whole bit. I had, I think, 3 or 5 employees working in Silicon Valley. And as you can imagine, there are all sorts of, you know, difficult things going on, but I decided to put A Course in Miracles first. And that timer would go off and it would just, I have to take a breath right in the middle of a meeting or whatever. Some people thought I was really mad because I would just go, then I'd smile and I'd say, all right, let's talk this. You know, it just snapped me out of my ego. I mean, it's, this stuff really works. Yeah. Thanks, Sundari. Okay, page 451, paragraph 1. Actually, we're starting a new section, so we're just going to read through paragraph after paragraph, and then we'll go back and discuss paragraph 1, time permitting. So, Holly, would you like to read for us paragraph 1 on page 451?
Okay. All special relationships have sin as their goal, for they are bargains with reality toward which the seeming union is adjusted. Forget not this. To bargain is to set a limit, and any brother with whom you have a limited relationship, you hate. You may attempt to keep the bargain in the name of fairness, sometimes demanding payment of yourself, perhaps more often of the other. Thus, in fairness, you attempt to ease the guilt that comes from the accepted purpose of the relationship. And that is why the Holy Spirit must change its purpose to make it useful to him and harmless to you.
Oh, man, we will come back around and discuss that. It is such a great reorientation to what you're doing with your relationships, especially your, you know, your love relationships, the dedicated relationships. Yeah. Great, great. Timothy, I got your mute. Would you read for us paragraph 2?
304 or 303.
It's on page 451.
Got it. Okay. Which number two?
Four, 451 in the text.
Oh.
I'm going to come back to you in a moment when you land there. Be ready. Barbara, I got your mute. Would you read for us page 2 on page 451? I mean, paragraph 2 on 451.
Yes. If you accept this change, you have accepted the idea of making room for truth.
Hello. Did you know that change is another word for miracle?
I didn't.
Did you know change is another word for forgiveness?
Nope.
For certainly.
Thank you. I like those substitutions.
Did you know that change is another word for healing? Please continue.
Okay. The source of sin is gone. You may imagine that you still experience its effects, but it is not your purpose and you no longer want it. No one allows a purpose to be replaced while he desires it, for nothing is so cherished and protected as is a goal the mind accepts. This it will follow grimly or happily, but always with faith and with the persistence that faith inevitably brings. The power of faith is never recognized if it is placed in sin, but it is always recognized if it is placed in love.
Beautiful paragraph. Beautiful teaching. Can't wait to discuss that. Okay, Tim, you there? Paragraph 3?
I am. There's a number of places where it talks about change, and we think about it in a positive way, and you gave a number of synonyms for change. Change is also a synonym in the course for not real. If it changes,
yeah, you can only change what's not real. That's a good point.
Okay. So know that there's two sides of a coin when you use the word change.
Good.
If I understand it correctly, you have to, you know.
Well, let me make a further point on that.
Please do.
Miracles only deal with error. They are not holy.
Miracles change, you said, too.
Miracles are not holy.
Right. So therefore, they are also not real in the sense that we like to use it in this course.
That is correct.
Okay. Why is it strange to you that faith can move mountains? Ooh, that's out of the New Testament. It is indeed a little feat for such a power, for faith can keep the Son of God in chains. As long as he believes, he's in chains. When he is released from them, it will simply be because he no longer believes in them. Withdrawing faith that they can hold him and placing it in his freedom instead. It's impossible to place equal faith in opposite directions. What faith you give to sin, you take away from holiness. And what you offer holiness has been removed from sin.
Wow. I would say that's some fine print in A Course in Miracles. Something to really pay attention to.
Yeah.
You can't have both. You play, when you believe, for example, that you are actually, part of you actually is that body in the mirror. When you make that investment and you believe you actually are in your body, that erodes the possibility of an eternal nature or eternal witness. You limit yourself and you will live by that limit. The more you believe it, the more limited you shall be, and the more chaos will have in your life. Turns out, thank goodness it's that simple, huh? Yeah, we'll talk about that later. Okay, Deborah, I got your mute. Would you read for us paragraph 4?
Faith and belief and vision are the means by which the goal of holiness is reached. Through them, the Holy Spirit leads you to the real world and away from all illusions where your faith was laid. This is his direction, the only one he ever sees. And when you wander, he reminds you there is but one. His faith and his belief and vision are all for you. And when you have accepted them completely instead of yours, you will have need of them no longer. For faith and vision and belief are meaningful only before the state of certainty is reached. In heaven, they are unknown, yet heaven is reached through them.
I love it. Beautiful. Just love it. Jacqueline, I got your mute. Would you read for us paragraph 5?
It is impossible that the Son of God lack faith, but he can choose where he would have it be. Faithlessness is not a lack of faith, but faith in nothing. Faith given to illusions does not lack power, for by it does the Son of God believe that he is powerless. Thus is he faithless to himself, but strong in faith in his illusions about himself. For faith, perception, and belief you made as means for losing certainty and finding sin.
This by the way, Don, is Don still here? Yeah. A little script is written in that sentence. Would you reread that sentence, Jacqueline? Listen how the script is written.
For faith, perception, and belief you made as means for losing certainty and finding sin.
And it has been working. Jacqueline, please continue.
This mad direction was your choice, and by your faith in what you chose, you made what you desired.
Beautiful. Thank you. Ross, I got your mute. Would you bring us paragraph 6?
The Holy Spirit has a use for all the means for sin by which you sought to find it.
The Holy Spirit will come meet you in the gutter if that's where you are. All things are lessons. God would have me learn all things. Would have me learn forgiveness. Please continue.
But as he uses them, they lead away from sin because his purpose lies in the opposite direction. He sees the means you use, but not the purpose for which you made them. He would not take them from you, for he sees their value as a means for what he wills for you. You made perception that you might choose among your brothers, and seek for sin with them. The Holy Spirit sees perception as a means to teach you that the vision of the holy relationship is all you want to see. Then will you give your faith to holiness, desiring and believing in it because of your desire.
Cool. Thank you. We're getting heavy into it now. Jason, are you there? Okay, we're going to go for Don. Don, I got your mute. Would you bring us paragraph 7?
Faith and belief become attached to vision, as all the means that once served sin are redirected now toward holiness. For what you think is sin is limitation, and whom you try to limit to the body, you hate because you fear. In your refusal to forgive him, you would condemn him to the body because the means for sin are dear to you. And so the body has your faith and your belief. But holiness would set your brother free, removing hatred by removing fear, not as a symptom, but at its source.
So good. So direct. So clear. Cecily, I got your mute. Will you bring us paragraph 8?
Those who would free their brothers from the body can have no fear. They have renounced the means for sin by choosing to let all limitations be removed. As they desire to look upon their brothers in holiness, the power of their belief and faith sees far beyond the body, supporting vision, not obstructing it.
For what Cecily just said, to have any truth, you would definitely need a miracle. Because we're talking about the people you have trouble with in your life mostly. And for you to somehow see holiness there and have and go beyond their limitations of what they said and what they did with four-letter words intermixed with your name, you definitely would have to have a miracle. You would not pretend to be able to do this. That's what the workbook is for, to allow you to be participate in the awakening around these difficult situations. You would need a miracle. That's why it's a Course in Miracles, not a Course in Forgiveness. Please continue.
As they desire to look upon their brothers in holiness, the power of their belief and faith sees far beyond the body, supporting vision, not obstructing it. But first, they chose to recognize how much their faith had limited their understanding of the world, desiring to place its power elsewhere should another point of view be given them. The miracles that follow this decision are also born of faith. For all who choose to look away from sin are given vision and are led to holiness.
Speaking to you like the ego addict you are. You know what I say so many times? It says, you know, the only problem is that you believe with your heart and soul that you know something. And you know something with your heart and your soul that is not true. Putting an immovable barrier in your life. Because you know it. You have faith, complete faith. You know something that's not true. Well, we're busting that. Totally. We're back to freedom we go. Jason, are you back? Would you read for us paragraph 9?
Sure. It's a beautiful full moon, by the way.
Nice.
Those who believe in sin must think the Holy Spirit asks for sacrifice, for this is how they think their purpose is accomplished. Rather, the Holy Spirit knows that sacrifice brings nothing. He makes no bargains. And if you seek to limit him, you will hate him because you are afraid. The gift that he has given you is more than anything that stands the sight of heaven. The instant for its recognition is at hand. Join your awareness to what has already joined. The faith you give your brother can accomplish this. For he who loves the world is seeing it for you, without one spot of sin upon it, and in the innocence that makes the sight of it as beautiful as heaven.
Well, that sounds like some healed thinking to me, and that's exactly what it is. Sundari, I got your mute. Would you bring us 10?
Your faith in sacrifice has given it great power in your sight, except you do not realize you cannot see because of it. Your sacrifice must be exacted of a body and by another body. The mind could neither ask it nor receive it of itself, and no more could the body. The intention is in the mind, which tries to use the body to carry out the means for sin in which the mind believes. Thus is the joining of mind and body an inescapable belief of those who value sin, and so is sacrifice invariably a means for limitation and thus for hate.
Ooh, boy, it's cutting deep, starting to get personal. Okay, back to the top. David, I got your mute. Would you read for us paragraph 11? Oops. David, you gotta, I don't have your mute. You muted yourself. I don't have control over yours. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, the Holy Spirit is concerned with this. Gives not what it is his purpose to lead you from. You think it would deprive you of your good, but good and deprivation are opposites and cannot meaningfully join in any way. It is like saying that the moon and sun are one because they come from night and day, and so they must be joined. Yet, sight of one is but the sign the other has disappeared from sight. Nor is it possible that what gives light be one with what depends on darkness to be seen. Neither demands the sacrifice of the other, yet on the absence of the other does each depend.
There's some really great metaphysics and actually psychology of perception in that paragraph that we'll get to. It's the sun and the moon analogy is fantastic. And back to you, Holly. Are you ready? Would you read for us the final paragraph 12 on 454?
The body was made to be sacrificed to sin, and in the darkness, so it still is seen. Yet in the light of vision, it is looked upon quite differently. You can have faith in it to serve the Holy Spirit's goal and give it power to serve as means to help the blind to see. But in their seeing, they look past it, as do you. The faith and the belief you gave, it belongs beyond. You gave perception and belief and faith from mind to body. Let them now be given back to what produced them and can use them still to save itself from what it made.
That is exactly what we're doing. This is a reversal of your thinking. Therefore, your experience will reverse handily with it, and you will continue up the staircase back to light for sure. Turned back to page 451. And Timothy, would you read for us paragraph 1 again on 451?
Okay. There we go. And you did get my mute. 451 and which one?
First paragraph. All special relationships have sin as their goal.
They do indeed, for they are bargains with reality for which the seeming union is adjusted. Get not this. The bargain is to set a limit And any brother with whom you have a limited relationship, you hate. Ouch.
Ouch.
You may attempt to keep the bargain in the name of, quote, fairness, unquote, sometimes demanding payment of yourself, sometimes, perhaps, more often of the other. This is then the, quote, fairness, unquote. You attempt to ease the guilt that comes from the accepted purpose of the relationship. That's why the Holy Spirit must change its purpose to make it useful to him and harmless to you.
Beautiful. So the Course in Miracles is calling out the special relationship by definition is a contract or a conditional relationship. And, you know, you break a contract and then I'm now allowed to ignore you. In fact, I'm allowed to fight you. If you broke the contract, I'll probably win. As far as I think, I'm right and you're wrong. This is a special relationship that is has a contingency.
And you're not to harp too much. Holy Spirit must change. It's a changing thing. Therefore, it is not permanent in the sense of that which is from heaven and has no change within it.
Right.
The Holy Spirit
is
one more form of change.
You got it. The Holy Spirit only works to translate because you've forgotten the truth. Holy Spirit's only job is to translate false back to true. You don't need the Holy Spirit in heaven. You don't need the Holy Spirit when you're awakened and you are a loving being. You are now the Holy Spirit.
To change what? Why do you need to be the Holy Spirit, you know, once you've moved into that space where the Holy Spirit has to change its purpose to make it useful to him and harmless to you?
You bet. And so until you get there, of course, once you have returned to one-mindedness, it's a non-issue. You've woken from the dream of separation. But until then, you're just like an addict, you know, an addict to anger, to fear, to guilt. Just like, you know, a person who's addicted to alcohol. A change has to occur so they don't wake up drunk and penniless and with their life ruined each time. If you don't want to be an alcoholic, have that you have to stop drinking. You really do have to make a change. If you don't want to be a drug addict or a sugar addict, you really have to stop eating the candy and keeping pockets full of it. Otherwise, you just continue because it is the habit you've adopted as normal. And as the previous paragraphs have said, we're going to dig into, you have faith that it will bring you happiness. Despite the unhappiness that surrounds it in its wake. So you need a change in perception about what you're doing. That's a miracle. Then you need forgiveness, which is to stop the habitual patterns. None of this is needed in heaven. None of this is needed in oneness. However, this is what right-mindedness is. It's a correction of your mind from what is otherwise painful and suffering, back to bring you back your empowerment as a creator, and as it is not just joyful, source for joy.
You have to get right down to the root level, don't you?
Yep.
I mean, you know.
You got it.
To make this happen in a real lasting way, you've got to get right down to the root level of the thought.
Man, you can't fake it. So many Course in Miracles students fake it. I mean, it makes their life a little better because they're no longer, you know, outwardly attacking, but they're still inwardly attacking. You got to go to the root level. You got it, Tim. What do you got, Sundari?
Well, this whole section, I was looking for a quote that David Hoffmeister had sent me, and I found it. And it feels to me that the journey from a special relationship to holy relationship is pledging the other one's truth. And here's something she wrote to me. Honesty is a very, very high state of mind in which everything that you believe, think, feel, say, and do is in perfect, consistent alignment. And it's the faith, for me, I'm hearing right now, it's the faith of that someone else and you are both holding the Holy Spirit equally and choosing to see that.
But you know what? It would take vigilance.
Oh, and discipline.
Some discipline. So just because you brought it up and we have 2 minutes left, let's go look at that quote in
Can
the
I
book.
Can I say something?
Yes.
Cecily had her hand up for a long time.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Hey, Cecily. Everybody turn to page 11 in the manual while we hear from Cecily, where the quote is from that Sundari just said. Page 11 in the manual for teachers.
Was that quote from the book or was that a quote from David himself?
David quoted the book.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And I will show you the sentence in the book.
Okay. So my question was about this first paragraph about special relationships and bargains that we have in our special relationships. And on like a practical day-to-day level, I feel like I have surpassed that in some of my relationships, like with my kids, for example, and my parents. I'm like, well, like I need to just accept them completely, however they present, and love them and see past any and through and beyond anything that may look like what I don't want it to look like. And I really have made just incredible progress with like those relationships, but not with other ones. Cause I feel like other ones are more like elective relationships and those ones are not, you know, like you got those ones. And so you need to show up for those people and be and love them and not see their faults. But like, you don't want a whole gaggle of faulted people in your life necessarily. So what
you also don't want to be a doormat and have everybody walk all over you and be this peace pacifist who loses all of their pride and material and has to can't sleep because somebody else needs their bed more than they do. So thank God, Course in Miracles is not actually trying to fix the world and bless everybody for what they do. In fact, what we're learning to do is we're to forgive our perception of what they seem to have done. This breaks the circle. This breaks the chain of punishment that you do to yourself. You've been willing to do that with your family because you realize you can't get away from your family. You've chosen to keep them. And so either you stop making yourself suffer over what they do, you've learned you can't change them, or you will just continue to suffer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful quotes. Yes, Holly.
One thing. So I just did a leadership course this past weekend, and it was getting to know your ego and like going to the root of like when you started compensating for things based on, let's say, for example, I learned that my mom wasn't like the best mom. So then to compensate, somehow I became a mom to everybody else. And so once you get to know who your ego is and who it became, it's like you can start to differentiate like, oh, wow, I'm doing that. But it's like, when you have those blind spots and you don't know why it's happening, it's harder to get there. It's harder to get to the forgiveness. But as soon as you find that root and you're like, oh, wow, it's like you can just transcend that a little bit, or at least that part of your voice is a little bit further away.
You bet. You have to become aware. You have to look.
Yeah.
You so have to look and see.
It's like once you know what your ego is doing, you actually can like detach from it. But it's like you really have to be honest, like you said, be honest with yourself and like figure out like what were you compensating for when, and why do you have that expectation?
You bet. If you're denying what your ego is doing, it might sound something like this. They did this to me. I didn't do it. Yeah, you have to get out of denial. This is part of your waking up to the power of your mind. Absolutely. Okay, we're out of time, but I want you to see this one beautiful sentence that David quoted on paragraph 11 of your book in the back, the very back. It says, Manual for Teachers on the top of the page, and the bottom of the page, it says 11. Short paragraph. I'll just read it for us. Yeah, you bet, Don. You bet. There's a lot. We're covering a lot of different levels of information tonight. But that's the idea, to reignite you to spend time with your book. And like Barbara demonstrated for us, thank you, Barbara, you have it for keeps, to become miracle-minded. In other words, if you're ever unhappy and you recognize, you catch it, know you can go back to peace. And that A Course in Miracles is a handy gift that has been given you to stop you from going down and help you to go back up to lightness of being. That's why I love the word enlightenment. Kid you not. This is in your life. This is for you. It is time now for you to awaken from the darkness of the ego. Take a look at this beautiful sentence on page 11, paragraph 1 at the bottom. He's talking about honesty. He says, all other traits of God's teachers, they rest on trust. Once that's been achieved, the others cannot fail to follow. There's a huge discussion there. Look at the next sentence. Only the trusting can afford honesty, for only they can see its value. There is a prerequisite to your honesty. There's a prerequisite. It's not some superpower you just try to have. You actually are born back to honesty by your own willingness. Willingness to do what? Take a look. Next sentence. Honesty does not apply only to what you say. The term actually means consistency. Here's what David was quoting in sentence six. There's nothing that you say that contradicts with what you think or do. And no thought opposes any other thought. No act belies your word, and no word lacks agreement with any other. Such are the truly honest. At no level are they in conflict with themselves. Therefore, it's impossible for them to be in conflict with anyone or anything. Imagine living a day where each thought that arises in you, the thought arises that you decide to keep, then predicts what you're going to say, which then predicts what you're going to do. And none of your other thoughts are in conflict with that thought because you're on a roll. This is to be perfectly conflict-free. You would have a sense of peace if you were this consistent throughout the day. Your thoughts and your words and your actions were all in unison. What a simple, simple way to live. You couldn't help but have a restful, peaceful day. You would think it would bring chaos in your life to be so honest. But you know people can see it on you, and it's very addictive.
Can I try an hour first?
Say it again?
Can I try an hour first?
Okay. Try 1 hour. Try 1 minute. Your thoughts don't compete with each other. And then what you say happens to be what you were actually thinking. Yeah, that's good, Ross. Okay, everybody. Thank you. Thank you for studying A Course in Miracles with me.